Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today, my guest is Peter Champoux. Before I bring him on, just a couple of announcements. I am still on the road for a couple more days, but I'll still be doing as many shows as possible while traveling. You can always get new episodes free on Rockfin, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms. Go check us out on Rockfin. It's where you get all our premium content, regular shows, and best of all the awesome content from every creator on Rockfin. Check out all the podcasts that we're featured on the Forbidden Knowledge Network. You get those on our website, forbiddenknowledge.news, and follow us on Facebook. All of those links are in the description. Finally, check out C60 Purple Power. It may be the most powerful antioxidant known to man. Incredible benefits, but you need to check them out for yourself. Click the link in the description, and if you order, you get 10% off plus free shipping. Today, I want to welcome Peter Champoux, author of Gaia Matrix, Moon Rivers, and Arc of Antero. He took a simple observation of coherent geometry in the New England landscape based on natural and cultural features and developed it into a geometaphysical art and science called Gaiography, the study of our living Earth. His bubbling planet-wide discoveries introduce Earth cell, Earth rings, ley lines, and the organic Earth grid to the wonderment that are the Earth mysteries. Peter, welcome. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Chris. Great to be on the show.
It's great to have you on. I really love discussing the hidden history on our planet, especially when it comes to things like Earth energy grids, ley lines, and the ancients' understanding of sacred geometry and really megalithic construction methods. But your work really goes beyond many of the commonly heard theories about this knowledge that I've heard. I'd like to know, what was it that got you started down this path looking into this stuff?
Well, back when I was born, you know, literally, I was dug out of a pile of rocks. And dinosaur footprints were discovered. So the living Earth was, you know, part of my life from day one. My father was made tires. So our family's money was this circular thing. Our church was this circular thing. And, you know, just kind of made an impression, I guess. It came out of my work with stone, and my name, Peter Champoux, means rock of the field. So, when in my teens, you know, who am I? What am I going to do? What's my meaning in life? I looked at my name and came up with, well, rocks and field. And I found Stonehenge pretty quickly after that. And I was off and running doing ley line studies of England and reading everything I could on that. But what I've done is taken all that knowledge that's been acquired by, people back engineering all of those megalithic sites and the Great Pyramid and, you know, and everything else, and trying to use those tools as a method to go forward into the future, so we can have this symbiotic future with kind of nested in the planet. You know, often when we see, like Jodie Foster, you know, when she made that first contact and was coming into these civilizational areas, they were always circular, you know, kind of like nesting into the planet. So I've discovered, it's there in plain sight. It's nothing hidden or forbidden. It's just, you got to look at it with your eyes kind of squinty.
Right.
But, you know, there are rings everywhere in the planet, and some are like rings of cities, and cities coalesce circularly. So I think what's going on is that there is a kind of an upwelling of energy from the Earth itself that bubbles out onto the surface, and that surface is a membrane of a cell. And that cell membrane is our collective consciousness. So, or our aggregate emotion, our aggregate mental body, however you want to look at it. So we have these earth rings that appear to be very similar to an integral membrane protein on a cell. And that's the conduit for the exchange of information between the inside of the cell into the nucleus and the outside environment. You know, what's needed to be exchanged and, and given off or taken in or, this type of thing. So there are all these signals being received via these centric forms around the planet. And often these centric forms have a geospiritual center of that circle that's granite. So those sacred sites in the context of a cell needing information and care, working at sacred sites is an essential component in a good stewardship of the planet. So I propose we pay all the indigenous people to go out there and do ceremony and pray at all the sacred sites.
Very good. Now, for a little bit of a better understanding of what these kind of earth rings are and how the ancients had an understanding of, what they were used for. And you said they had sacred attributes for some of the megalithic sites. How do you think the ancients came upon this knowledge, first of all?
The spacemen came down and gave them some books. Hey. Here, read this.
According to Ancient Aliens, maybe. Yeah.
It's just an emanation of nature. And if you look for it, you see it everywhere. And that emanation is based on the Enneagram, which is like a tempo within creation, the nine, 360, breaks down to nine and all this stuff, nine, 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 nine. So this pattern of nine that I found in these earth rings, radiant kind of forms, I might be going off track here, but lasso me in if I do, please.
Sure. You're fine.
But these radiant forms mimic the interior of the planet. So I was finding these forms and I had a question, what are they? And then a friend sent me this this diagram of an earth energy vortex that he had housed out in Medford, Oregon. And this vortex had a pyramid in it. So, implied to it, whatever. So there was this certain radial pattern that was discovered within the vortex itself. So those same ring patterns match the ring patterns I was finding on the surface. And it kind of clicked and I said, well, that I've seen that somewhere. And indeed there was this USGS model of the interior of the planet that had that same ring pattern to that. And in later years, I found that the same ring pattern is exhibited in the human eye. It's in the cymantics of didgeridoo, the sound waves that didgeridoos make. And so it's this emanation that's for the sensitive, you can feel it in a vortex. So with Stonehenge being an earth energy vortex, they arranged the stones to match that vortex to amplify that energy so that they could fertilize the fields and make crops grow better. That's the only reason to devote that kind of prodigious work on rolling rocks around. I've moved a few myself, but it has to be an important reason. And that's the only thing I can think of is grounding sky nitrogen via megaliths. So in the bigger the megalith, the more charge it would have, especially on a ley line. So they often are shown, like in certain, like solar storms, for instance, the megaliths will often hum and put off a blue light, the old, here I go, often historical tangents, but
no, if it's good.
the in exploring the mounds along the straight tracks of England, they found that these toots, these you know, like these earthen mounds, often had cromlechs on it, or these certain style of stacking stones, and inside the you know, undisturbed earth was this rock that was melted. So it appears as though that there was this overcharge of the ley line system at one point, and it, you know, blew out. I mean, to melt rock, it's, you know, 5,000 degrees or something like that. I think they had a really kind of a bioelectric power system there. A lot of the ley lines of England are oriented towards Atlantis. So I suspect that there might be some kind of telluric exchange of frequency energy between, you know, Atlantis's earth-based technologies that they employed with the Great Pyramid and such.
Now, you said it's pointed towards Atlantis. By Atlantis, you know, where, what area are you referring to?
Well, I'm just going with Plato. Mm-hmm. He said, you go through the gates of Hercules and take a left, and out there to the west is Atlantis. And right there is the Azores. And for something the size of Atlantis, you know, which incidentally also the design, the quoted design of Atlantis also matched these earth rings patterns. So Atlantis was in a vibrational, harmonic, symbiotic shape form with the planet. Mm-hmm. But the problem was, you know, like there was a lot of telluric energy to harvest off the Mid-Atlantic Rift where the Azores are. But, you know, so, you know, that baby was humming, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
But, you know, it cracks open every now and then, and the Mid-Atlantic Rift opens up, and there goes Atlantis. So the main ley line of England points right to the Azores. So that's why I kind of go with that.
How important were some of these megalithic construction sites when it comes to alignments of stars and, you know, alignments to the solstices and different satellites and different constellations? How does this all connect to the construction with the ley lines and earth rings?
I'm not sure if they're directly connected, or I haven't seen them directly connected. Mm-hmm. There is a connection of the sun cycles, sun and galactic cycles. So mm-hmm. the ley lines fluctuate. I don't know. Maybe this. I don't know. This came in as an answer. This is the work of Corey Rory Duff. Mm-hmm. RoryDuff.com. He's an English geomancer and dowser. What he's found is that there's a waveform, a galactic waveform that undulates every, you know, the undulation we go through every 12,000 years. And we're heading into that. So there's this increase in light. And because of that, the ley lines are moving all around. And then every time we actually go through a solar sheet, the ley lines come into coherence. They move together. Otherwise, they're moving in a kind of serpentine caduceus kind of thing.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Now, you in your email, you mentioned pyramidal dysfunction. What exactly is this, and how does this tie in?
Yeah, this is something that really kind of bothers me here. Kind of an alert. A lot of work has been done on it, but the Great Pyramid is the center of one such earth ring. And it's actually a moon ring. Yeah. There's a lot of rings coming out of that. But it has this this arc, if you will. We'll go from big to small.
Okay.
Yeah. So you have, where do I start with the pyramid? Point, you know, there's a point. And
start at the smallest point, right.
So the pyramid where it's located is there are a lot of, to tell if there's if it's an earth matrix, things point to it, like coastlines point to it. In the case of North America, you know, the center of North American tectonic plate was pointed to by the coast of Maine, by the Appalachian Mountains, by the river patterns, by Manhattan Island. They all pointed to the center point of the North American tectonic plate. So over in Africa, you know, we have all these coastlines, and they all point to the Great Pyramid. The delta of the Great Pyramid is this fan, this very regular fan that's been the same way for eons, and the point of the fan goes right to the Great Pyramid. And the edge, if you take the edge of the Great Pyramids, you know, project the edges, that goes out that defines that fan. So the fan is like, it itself is part of that temple complex of the Great Pyramid. So the Great Pyramid is this point that's just sticking up a little bit above the sand, but the rest of it goes through the entire planet. And it's part of the whole geometric kind of Merkaba stability field of the planet to maintain the Jed, the 23.5 degree angle of the ecliptic, which is a ritual that they would do every year, the raising the Jed and such. So you have this pyramid that is, you know, the angle of the pyramid is the bonding angle of water. I don't know why anybody doesn't, you know, it's like, this is really obvious, but nobody talks about it. And so it bonds to the biosphere. It bond, and it's a consciousness mem as well, you know, top-down economics. We got to go through the big guy in order to get to God. You know, you have to, you know, it's filtered leadership stuff, organizational things that they like to, you know, control people. So, you know, I mean, pyramidal structures, royalty, all that.
Right, right.
So it all is being emanated out of the Great Pyramid.
Very.
And it's being emanated via the ley lines that it sits on. So the Great Pyramid is located in a place where it's the greatest landmass. It is marked as a central point for the whole planet. So if you follow that X marks the spot that is the Great Pyramid, and just imagine those as ley lines and taking them out over the planet, you'll find some very concerning things, you know, genocide and such, you know, 15 million people here, this kind of thing happening, you know, the Darfur and Armenia and up there in Syria right now. And it's just this, it's kind of like a bloody carnage. So when you project these lines out, one of them goes through Mecca in the southeast. So it suggests, you know, it's so exact that it suggests that the Great Pyramid and Mecca are part of the same temple complex that the ancients had set up. Because that site was an ancient moon goddess. You know, the moon goddess, her name was Allah. You know, so the one god that was Muhammad chose to, you know, represent all of them together. You know, so they have this rock there and everything. But so there's this beat, if you will, a pulse that's set by that radius from the Great Pyramid to
Mecca. In a way, it kind of harnesses human consciousness and emanates through the planet, through these ley lines, in a way, is what you're saying?
Yeah, there is a kind of like poo in, poo out kind of thing going on where the information, the pyramids take in information via its sides, and then it's transmitted out its edges.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's whatever the collective emotion is around it gets projected out out into the, you know, like a donut field. That's what's going on. When you have a pyramid and an obelisk, it generates a relational donut sphere going on there.
That is very interesting.
Vortex.
Now, go ahead.
Just to complete that ring, the Mecca ring has Baghdad and Istanbul on it. So the Constantinople and the center of the Shia faith of so that, you know, you have this ring of Islamic faith right around the Great Pyramid. And if you project like one of the lines goes out and goes through Fukushima. So that type of genocidal stuff. And another one goes over here through the U.S., which I don't know if you have a lot of Texas listeners, but
I'm in vacation in Texas right now.
But there's a ley line that comes from the Great Pyramid down the St. Lawrence Seaway, right by kind of like down the corridor, Austin, San Antonio corridor there, that, you know, kind of up, just up a little bit up in the hill there away from it, that corridor. And that goes down to Durango, Mexico, where the tip of the pyramid comes out. So, you know, when you project it, project the pyramid from, you know, Cairo through the planet, where that edge point comes out is down in Durango, Mexico. And Durango, Mexico is where all the, you know, drug cartels are, you know, that's the kind of golden triangle of Mexico right now.
Do you think all the pyramids that are around the planet had similar types of purposes?
I think it was a control grid. That was in place and it's modeled after this one. And it works so good that they say, well, let's try it over here for, you know, right, our purposes. Yeah, but it worked so good because it was so tied in with the geophysical, spiritual, bioelectric part, you know, water, you know, I mean, it had everything, you know, measure. It was just the perfect resonator for all that. But when it lost its skin, it really shifted in a big way. It got very degenerate. And that, I think the Dark Lords took over at that point, but it's been quite a fight to kick them out of there, and we've been working on it for a few years, but really needs to be rebuilt. That's done something of that nature to it.
Now, you mentioned the significance of water and also sacred geometry of water. I was hoping you could talk a little bit about that and how that connects to this as well.
Yeah, everything's water. It's all, everything's water based. And it starts out in the nebula where after a sun explodes, there's a nebula phase and then it turns into a solar system. And in the nebula phase, there's a typical nebula is generating 60 oceans an hour or something like that out there. And that water coalesces, bonds together. That collects dust. The dust and water generates gravity. The gravity fields then start to spin because of opposing magnetics. Eventually a sun is sparked, and then you have this beautiful solar system happening. Where was I going? I got lost in outer space there.
We were just talking about sacred geometry of water.
Sacred geometry. So water, if you take the bonding angle of water, the ideal bonding angle is 104.5. But if it fluctuates from 90 to 120, depending upon the quality and kind, and whether it's heavy water, light water, and all this different stuff, and distilled water, it all has a different bonding angle to it. Mm-hmm. So that 104.5 is considered the best. So the Great Pyramid has a 103.5 angle to its, you know, double sides, if you will, coming down from the top, you know. So that that angle is all but the same angle as water, especially in the fluctuation, you know, the fudge factor, if you will, with water. But water, within that geometric, I sent you a graphic of that, but within that geometric, there you can find, or you can generate the Vesica Pisces, or the ichthyus, you know, that little Jesus fish you see in the back.
Yes.
Garden. Yeah. So that's the ichthyus, but, you know, so it's up on edge. It's generated by two points generating common arcs. And, but the whole arrangement with where everything touches and meets, and it generates this, you know, a heptagon, a pentagon. And then, of course, the Vesica Pisces does all the 2, 2, 4, 6, 8, you know, nines, that does all those kinds of things. So it's like, it's the seed molecule for sacred geometry. So anything water touches, it generates a geometry. People, volcanoes, patterns of volcanoes, you know, that kind of thing. So it's holy, you know, it's like this miraculous stuff that just transforms matter. And so we have down below, underneath 200 miles down, we have this stuff called ringwoodite layer. It's four oceans worth of water is down there. And every volcano that happens, we have this upwelling of water that comes with it. And so where the volcanoes are actually upwelling on the African continent, we have a five volcanic vents that cohere in a pentagonal form, just out of nature. So it's God's, you know, it's sacred because it's generated by nature,
right?
Not drawn, not contrived. It's just, you know, like a flower.
Yeah, you broke up for a second. What did you say?
I said usually just in simple polygons. It's not, you know, when you speak of nature, there a lot of you know, the Platonic solids have been given a lot of teleplay, mm-hmm, as the model for the ley lines of the planet Earth. You know, the quote Earth grid you see on Ancient Aliens and such is a really excellent teaching model, geographic teaching model that was developed. But, you know, ley lines, I don't feel, I haven't found, have corresponded to that particular model. Sometimes you find parallel lines, but it's not, you know, it's become the ubiquitous form and accepted form of what ley lines are. But it, to me, it's so regular, it looks like a jail cell.
Right.
You know? And it might be something that they're trying to, you know, get into the consciousness of the people who are trying to transform things and kind of trap their consciousness in that way. That's been discussed at various websites that, you know, that the tree of life, or the flower of life geometry is like a mental trap.
Wow, so that's really interesting. Something else you wrote to me in your email was about the glial brain and the found missing 90%. What is this?
Oh, yeah, that's a fun one.
Yeah, what is this?
Yeah, that's it was in a salon. We were studying the glial brain, a gaggle. Okay. We have gaggles of giggling glia all through our bodies. You know, every neuron has nine attendant glia cells. So the cottage cheese in our brain is mostly this glia, mm-hmm, and it operates on calcium ions, where blood is, you know, plasma and iron and all that other stuff. You know, this glial, you know, drink your milk, you know, because you need this calcium, that's a lot like when they say, oh, we only use 10% of our brain. They're talking about the 10% of the neurons, but they're kind of excluding all this gray matter as being kind of worthless fluff, like insulation or something. But that's communicating via frequency. It's faster than the speed of light. Frequency is faster than light. So neurons work on light, and glia work on frequency. So we have our head, our heart, and our stomach, all, you know, high concentrates of glia cells in those three plates. So those are our three brains.
Right.
But there's glia, you know, there's glia with every neuron, you know, fingertips, whatever. So that's the, you know, this 1 to 90%. So, you know, you look around, well, what else? Well, we have dark matter is, you know, on the other side of the fractal scale, where it's, well, we only know what 10% of the matter is and everything else is gray. We have the gravity for 90% more matter, but it's not there. So we call it dark matter. So that's like the glia of space, you know, being attendant to these light forms, you know, these electron suns around. So it's, then the other one is we have, we're only using 10% of our DNA.
You know? Yeah.
All the rest of it's junk, you know? And so,
yeah.
So it's the same thing. So it's my sense is that we use our DNA via our frequency attenuators of glia cells and communicate with all there is, all the other, you know, like the dark matter. So we're receiving information in that way all the time. You know, and our that 90% of, you know, this DNA, if you stretch it out, you take the aggregate length of the average human body, it goes, there's 12 billion miles of this stuff in us. So that is one antenna system that you can, you know, connect with the whole heliosphere of the planet, of the sun. You know, the sun reaches 12 billion miles. So it's that kind of expanded, you know, centeredness, but connectedness. And I mean, that's accessed through the glial body. That's the heart. That's the heart mind, if you will, because it takes in the resonant frequencies around you that you don't, it may not be audible. So the glial body is what picks up on whatever.
So, I mean, basically there's a connection to not only to each person, not only to us and the planet, but to us and the universe, really. Everything has this kind of consciousness connection, right?
And to say otherwise would be a blasphemy.
I would think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me get a little sip here.
Sure. Yeah. Now, I want to talk about the history of the cultural use of stone versus what we're doing now with our building methods and construction, and how we can't even reproduce much of the things that the ancients did when it came to megalithic construction. Why do you think that is? And what was the difference? How were they using stone? How were the ancients using this?
Well, this kind of leads right into the, from the glial conversation, it leads into that conversation, because the planet, you know, being, you know, we're in the image and likeness of the planet and all that is, planet also has glia, and it's made of calcium. So we have all these, like Texas is made up of a lot of calcium deposits. So that's planet ganglia. And you go around the planet, you find like the south of England, limestone, Egypt, limestone, Jerusalem, not limestone, south of France, I mean, all these places that are sacred sites have that planet glia, that attenuating frequency of limestone, helping them. So in the past, you know, chicken or the egg, I mean, maybe civilization arose just because of the existence of limestone, because it's easy building material. But I tend to think that there's a certain, you know, within limestone, there's this underlayment of water. So when you got underground water, there's a lot of vortexes and ley lines associated with it. So there's more of a breathing going on within limestone, where granite is just this, you know, it's like it's sends off the electrical current, but you can't really, you know, like bathe in it. In the ancient times, they recognized that if you use the canons of sacred geometry, the canons of nature in construction, you would be creating a building that's in harmony with the planet, and it would actually, you know, everything would be magnified. You know, that the quality of space would be magnified, that the earth would be magnified, the culture itself would be magnified. So they spent a lot of energy in creating temples that were, you know, really humming and tuned to these sacred canons. As we went away from that, there's been this loosening up of the connection between culture and matter. You know, Earth has become a commodity that we've become very parasitic off of. And it's kind of floating on the surface. But, you know, rock is heavy stuff, and it's nice drapery now, but it doesn't serve any of its noble purposes as it did in the old times. Mm-hmm. But cultures that did, I complete that thought, cultures that did follow those sacred canons in the construction tended to have like 1,000-year runs, where those that didn't did that 275-year pulse that civilizations do.
Yeah, rise and fall, just 200 and something years. Yeah,
you're right. Yeah, so is that a good stab at that one?
Oh yeah, definitely. Now I want to talk about, you mentioned earlier that basically the Dark Lords had taken over everything. I tend to agree, and I have many guests that have theories about, you know, this global takeover of our civilization, hijacking of not only our governments and corporations, but our consciousness and the way that we're thinking. When do you think that this kind of global takeover occurred? Do you think it's been for thousands of years, or do you think it's more something more recent, within a few hundred years, that like you call them, Dark Lords took over?
Yeah, I think when we had a beautiful, thriving planet, and then we got hit with this last catastrophe, and you know, we see the remnant of this old civilization in 350 feet, you know, off on the continental shelf. So these old cities out there, pyramids under the, you know, by Cuba and a lot of different places. You know, it was a beautiful planet. It had an ice canopy that was protective from radiation, so flora and fauna really thrive. And when all that collapsed, it generated this kind of degenerated, you know, everything was in upheaval, you know. So before everything was connected, you had this system of pyramids. They're all kind of interacting and you know, enlivening the planet themselves, enlivening the magnetic field of the planet, and everything was kind of like working together. And then when these things collapsed, just like an electrical system that collapses, you get these sparks coming off these different places, and these lack of coherence and all this thing that happens when systems break down. So that's when, you know, so there's this remnant that's still there, but it's a remnant that's kind of chugging along in a collapsed state, in a state of entropy. So states of entropy is where the Dark Lords thrive. And so we get fascinated by these, you know, we are fascinated by the past and the state of entropy. I'm sorry, but it's like giving energy to this past collapse when we need to step forward into a new relationship with planet. that's not based on this collapsed system that went haywire back 5,000 years ago, 6,000 years ago.
You think this collapse was a natural type of cataclysm or something more intentional?
It's people have conjectured, channeled, that there was the passing of Planet X, and that stripped the planet of its atmosphere because of the debris. There was it's simply, when you look at the Bible, the Bible's fact, and Methuselah lived to be 1,000 years old, and David was 70 years when he died. So it was in the old times, you got to live longer. Then there was this flood, and after the flood, you could ferment grapes. Before the flood, you could not ferment grapes. So that meant that there was more radiation hitting the planet. So everybody started to die younger. And because of that new condition, the off-world civilizations that were, like here, doing its thing, split because it was no longer viable for their type of biologies, that they couldn't handle the radiation. But us, kind of like slaves that were developed not to die, and no matter what condition, tough humans, who were given free will by the Syrians, who put some silica in our systems to develop consciousness. It's been quite a history, but I think that's why E.T. doesn't really come home.
So do you think that the Anunnaki mythos may be somewhat accurate, that we were kind of tinkered with, our DNA or genetics may have been advanced by an advanced off-planet species?
Yeah, I adhere to one or two theories. that one, from what I understand, the Anunnaki weren't that great of manipulators of DNA. So they employed the Syrian people, the geneticists, to create us. But they would not create a human species without the Anunnaki wanted automatons. And the Syrians would not do that. They wouldn't create a new species without giving them the ability to develop consciousness. So that's where we came from. Okay, there's that one. Then the other one is that there's, every time we go through one of these galactic sheets, there's an upgrade in our DNA that happens because of the light path. And that evolves us.
Right.
And there are certain, frequency codes within this, these sheets that comes out from the galactic center, that's just informing all the planets, to activate these DNA codes, to do their thing, just to grow. And it's a beautiful thing.
Do you think that we're going through a period of time like that at this time, where people's consciousnesses are expanding and evolving because of some of this cosmic energy, possibly?
Oh yeah, absolutely. There was, we were entering the photon belt was about 15 years ago, around 2012 or something, but we're really starting to enter it now. To actually go through, I think about what with these troughs and mountains of energy of these plasma sheets that we fly through and spinning around the galaxy. I think there's one is positive and one's negative. Then you have a transition zone between. And when you're in that transition zone, that's when you get, hit with these light codes. And then you work it out in this next 12,000 year period. So I'm thinking that we're heading into a good 12,000 year period. And those, our light codes are all being upgraded You know, I mean, yes, there is global warming is or global environmental collapse is being exacerbated by humans, but the entire system is warming up and heating up, and Mars is melting. You know, I mean, it's just showing that there's this increase in light. As a kid, you know, to cap this off, as a kid, I'd paint the orange sun. Now I'd have to say it was titanium. I mean, there's a definite increase of light hitting the Earth now, and that's bound to transform anything and everything.
Well, along the same lines of, you know, cosmic energy hitting the planet, we were talking about resets and cataclysms earlier that may have wiped out a good portion of life on the planet. Do you think that we may be due for another type of reset in within our lifetime?
Yeah, geez, this is a tough planet, ain't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You just about get up and get on the bicycle and boom, here comes another catastrophe.
Right, right.
How do we drive this planet through all these cycles of catastrophes that we have that just destroy us? And oh, geez, not it's starting up again, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, God. But, catastrophes.
I mean, do you think we're overdue for? Do you think we're overdue for the next big one?
We're overdue for it, and that's evident in the electromagnetic field of the planet. Mm-hmm. You know, when after a catastrophe, you know, a cataclysm, the magnetic field of the planet goes to a very coherent north and south demarcation. You know, very strong electromagnetic charge. And prior to a cataclysm happening, all those charges get all mixed up, you know, the plus and the minus, and you get these like mid-Atlantic anomaly or South Atlantic anomaly, yeah. and the Indian Ocean anomaly and all that just it tries to find coherence. So in order to do that, it has to change polarity. Now, when you change polarity, you change spin. If you were to reverse wires on a dynamo, the dynamo would spin in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. And that's what Harvard professor emeritus of astrophysics said would happen if the poles shifted, like plus became minus, it would have to stop and make this adjustment. So when you make that adjustment, you're going to have this cataclysmic thing. Geologists have puzzled that the Andes looks like it was thrown up in the day in a single day. So it's like when that thing torques and changes, the entire surface gets all that rock, granite, and everything gets kind of like pushed together and gets an increase of piezoelectric energy is generated within the membrane field that then can work in consort with the inner core to generate a stable field. So the only way I can think of to be able to do this, not have to have the Earth go through it, and for us to be able to continue driving, and we have to contribute that electromagnetic frequency, those electromagnetic energies to the planet in order to enliven it without having to go through these big changes. So, and that's the job of Earth rings. That's the job of these circular forms that I'm finding around the planet.
Do you think that it's possible that there are powerful forces on this planet that have already known that we are overdue for a cataclysm, know that we may be facing one within our lifetime, and have already put in measures to maybe start countering this? I know that there's some theories that what they're spraying in the sky is to kind of stop this grand solar minimum, the effects from occurring. You know, you mentioned the magnetic field. I know our magnetic field is rapidly moving towards Siberia, so the magnetic field has already started to flip, and I know once it gets gets to a certain point, there's going to be no stopping it. It will reverse. So I'm wondering if you think that there are members of our elite government that already know about this and maybe trying to stop it or slow it down, or maybe just get the hell off the planet.
My sense is, they want to hold on to their control. And this incoming light, we're going back to the circle. And that's the most dangerous. That's what was most dangerous about the Native American people, is because of their direct relation with Creator. They're trying to hold on to their powers, and we're returning to the circle, which is just the expression of this planet. It's inevitable. So it's like, we got to get out of this pyramidal frame of mind, because they'll always do that. Then they always have done that.
Right. Yeah, they definitely have to keep their control by any means. Fear is the definitely controller. Definitely. Now, I really enjoyed this, Peter. That was fantastic information. Before we close out tonight, is there anything else important that we should discuss about some of these topics?
I would just like to close in saying that I offer these as a way in which to release a lot of collective trauma that's in the land. Like the releasing the trauma of the Native experience over the last 500 years really needs to be addressed. And, it's through, working with these sacred sites, I think that we can do that. Mm-hmm. And I believe that this is a tool for environmental stabilization and harmony. We've used it in the past to make it rain successfully. Getting some kind of support and patronage I don't play all the different PayPal and all this stuff, but there's a Medici out there somewhere that resonates with what I'm saying with this work. I think we can really do a lot towards bringing environmental harmony back to the planet.
Yes, excellent. Now, if people would like to find out more about yourself, your work, your books, what's the best way that they can do so?
Yeah, you just Google my name. That pretty much comes up. It's either me or a couple of hockey players from Canada.
Right. Awesome. So, I will also leave the links in the description that you said.
Yeah, Geometry Place. I've done a lot of studies that aren't on my website. I desperately need to upgrade my website and publish all these various articles I've done over the years and have that all available. And I try to have it all available. You can, my book is available on Google Play, Gaia Matrix, my name, and you can download it for quick like. Otherwise, it's I sell them, and there's a few sites, two sites that also sell the book.
Wonderful, man.
I'm working on the Encyclopedia of Earth Rings. I'm trying to get it out before all my gray hair falls out.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, well, I'd love to talk to you again when you get that out. This is fantastic information, a lot of stuff that I've never heard before, and I'm sure the audience is going to find this fascinating. So, Peter, thank you so much for coming on, and I'd love to talk to you again soon in the future.
Yeah, thank you.
And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening. We will talk again Monday.